Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to the Meet Me at the Diner show with host Ann Ella. Our special guest today is Loy Sarton, talking about the Benjamin Mays Project. Here is your host, live from Sharp Facets Gallery, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here today. It's a very special Meet Me at the Diner today. We are looking forward to having a call-in from the one, the only, Hank Aaron, folks. That's right. He broke a lot of records. He's still around. He's going to be calling to talk to us about Benjamin Mays. That's right. You know, this is a big dedication coming up next Tuesday. Actually starts at 1 o'clock. I've just gotten one of the programs. This is going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal dedication right over there on North Hospital Street. So be prepared to hear all about it. My very special guest today is Loy Sarton. He is the curator over there and has done a lot of research on Benjamin Mays and has pulled this together. It's quite a place. And, you know, it's something, again, it's in our backyard, and quite often things in our backyard, we don't see the significance as much as other people do. So welcome to the show today, Loy Sarton. How are you doing?
Fine, Ann. It's a pleasure to be here on the air with you.
It certainly is. And, of course, a few weeks ago we had Dr. Patton here, and, of course, he is thrilled that you came on board to help pull this project together. How long have you actually been working on this, Loy?
I've been out there a little over a year, Ann. Got started really about March, setting the grounds up, the shrubs and the flowers, and started planning what to put in the home and the museum and the school. So it's been a fun project, and I've really enjoyed working out there, and it's really come together.
I think, how did you get into this job to begin with?
Well, I had retired from a teacher's assistant at Matthews Elementary, and I guess I needed something to do with my time. But I checked with Dr. Patton the status of the site and found that although the buildings had been moved there in 04 and 06 and 07, it was basically dormant. They were empty, and it needed some work. And he didn't have anybody to really help him out because he was busy with his work as CEO of Gleams. Mm-hmm. So it was a real pleasure for him to welcome me aboard to put everything together out there.
And you've learned so much by doing this. You've also set up, I understand, a sharecropper's garden there?
Yes, we have tried to set the site up to look like a 1900-era sharecropper's place. We had a huge garden there of tomatoes and cantaloupe and cucumbers and silver queen corn, okra, butter beans. And then Dr. Patton wanted us to plant a little cotton field because that was Mays's life, Dr. Mays. He worked cotton, planted it, picked it, and so we planted a cotton field, and it really turned out beautiful. It bloomed out in mid-October, and I'm really happy to say that it still looks really good out there, still hanging on the bushes, and so that's going to make a good show. People really love the cotton field when they come out for tours, and they just have to go down and look at it and touch it, because a lot of people have never seen cotton, never been up close to it. So I'm really proud of that. That's the first time I've ever grown cotton, so it turned out really well.
Well, you know, I think that's really exciting. You know, of course, give us just a short intro on Dr. Mays. I mean, you know, he was the eighth child?
He was the youngest child of eight children.
That's right, and his parents were former slaves.
They were Hezekiah and Luvinia, his parents, born in 1856 and 1862, respectively. He was born here in Greenwood on Highway 178 South in the Epworth community, August 1st of 1894. And I like to tell people when they come through the site there a few things about him, the highlights of his life. Of course, he was an advisor to three presidents, President Kennedy, President Johnson, President Carter. He was very close with President Carter. And he was, of course, mentored to Dr. Martin Luther King. And I've learned a good deal really what that means, more so than what I initially knew.
But a mentor to Martin Luther King.
That's right. That's correct.
That means that he helped him.
Oh, yes.
He helped Martin Luther King.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Oh, yes. Martin Luther King came into his college at age 15 in the early admissions program that Dr. Mays set up. And Dr. King Fleming actually went into the college to become a lawyer, but by watching Dr. Mays and the influence of Dr. Mays, especially his 9 o'clock a.m. sermons every Tuesday for almost 27 years, Dr. Mays would preach his students. Dr. King was always there. And due to the influence of Dr. Mays, he decided to go into the ministry.
Wow.
And actually, Ambassador Andrew Young, I was reading something recently that he wrote in a paper in 1984, right after Dr. Mays died. He said this. He said, Martin Luther King used to say all the time that he was awakened spiritually and intellectually by listening to Dr. Mays at those 9 o'clock Tuesday morning sermons.
You know, one of the things, we are going to have a call in from Hank Aaron in just a few minutes. And, of course, you know, baseball, all his records, all the things that have gone on. We're going to hit on some of those. We've got some great questions for some kids that wanted to ask some questions, so we'll have those. But as we talk about the time frame, 1894, you know, it seems, and he went to Bates College, which is up in my home state of Maine. It just seems amazing that somebody that was born in 1894 rose to the heights that he did. You know, and we were just trying to talk about what would make that happen? What do you think made that happen?
Dr. Mays, from the time he was very young, had an insatiable desire, a burning desire to get his education. His father didn't want him to go to high school, but he persisted, and he went to high school and then on to college. But that was what Mays wanted to do. He got tremendous encouragement from his teacher at the Brick House School and also his pastor, Reverend Marshall from the old Mount Zion Church, encouraged him to go to school, and they were tremendous influences in his life, and he credits that that the people, different people in different stages of his life, really drove him on to be successful in life.
Well, it kind of makes you just wonder, because, you know, we look at today's world, we look at our children growing up, and it just seems to be there had to be something that just drove him. I mean, the youngest of 8 children. Normally, the youngest is a little laid back, a little easier, because the older kids are taking care of everything. They're usually, when they're the last child, they maybe get babied a little bit more. And yet, he went on to such greats. It's really hard to understand for me that somebody that could go from that to become the president of Morehouse College and advise, like you said, presidents and everything.
It is a tremendous thing. Dr. Mays, just, he says on a film that we have that he... or speech, that he wishes that every young child from a very early age could develop a burning desire to be someone worthwhile in the world. And we played that speech, his 1966 speech, that evening in the Greenwood Museum at about 6:45. So I would encourage you to listen to that speech. It's a tremendous, profound speech. And then we're going to play one at 7:30. It was his famous sermon in 1954 at Evanston, Illinois, to the Second Assembly of the World Council of Churches. Another great speech, and those will be played that evening.
Well, you know, this is going to be a great day here, and of course, coming up on Tuesday, April 26th at 1 p.m. over there at North Hospital Street, right there on the Gleams Resource Center there, a beautiful, beautiful ceremony. A lot of great people are going to be here for this. You don't want to miss it. It's free. Everybody's invited.
Yes, we have Dr. Franklin, president of Morehouse College, where... Dr. Mays was president for 27 years. He's going to be there. And,
we'll get to some
people.
Of those in just a few minutes. I just wanted to remind you that this is going on this Tuesday, which is why we're going to be talking about it. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we are going to have the one, the only, the record breaker, Hank Aaron, right here on Meet Me at the Diner. So don't you go away.
Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy
gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood. 229-6276.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us with Meet Me at the Diner. We're continuing with the show with Loy Sarton and Hank Aaron. Live from Sharp Fences Gallery, here's Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. I can't believe that I am actually have on the phone with us here today the one and only Hank Aaron. And, of course, we are thrilled to have you on the air today. And, you know, we were just talking off air, Loy and I and Hank were just talking about pork chops. So, Hank, what did you have to say? You haven't had a pork chop in years?
I haven't had one, and I know it must have been, I would have to say 10 years, 10, maybe more than that. You know, I had my share, as you mentioned before, when I was playing baseball, when I was only making $100 a month, and that was the only thing I could afford to buy. I could buy two pork chops for a dime.
Well, it says here that you ate pork chops three meals a day, two for breakfast, and then I guess two for lunch and dinner.
That's true. That is so true. I was, and that's why they start, and that's why they was called, that's why they couldn't, my nickname was Pork Chops.
Well, you know, that is terrific. Now, you of course, were a part of the Indianapolis Clowns when you first started out.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting. And then what, the Braves bought you for $10,000 or played the Clowns $10,000?
I'm sorry, we had an interruption just now.
Oh, okay.
And I could hardly hear the last portion.
Oh, okay. I understand that the Clowns were paid $10,000 by the Braves.
They paid the. Now let's get.
I mean, paid the played the Braves played the paid the Clowns.
The Braves paid the Clowns $10,000 for my contract, and of that $10,000, what I got out of it was a cardboard suitcase, which lasted me about 6 weeks.
Wow.
Because it so happened that when I signed my first professional contract to go play with the Eau Claire Bears in the Northern League, it was raining when I got off the plane, a little putt-putt, two motor plane. And when I got off the plane, it was raining. They had no shelter, so I had my bag in my hand, and little did I know the thing just fell apart.
Wow.
So I didn't have that very long, but that was all I had, you know, and talking to someone the other day, they said, would you change anything? I don't know that I would, really.
You know, I've got to, one of the things that I know Loy is jumping up and down here wanting to ask some questions, but I'm gonna monopolize it for just a second here. I know that there was a lot of hate that was going on when you were getting close to breaking the record.
Mm-hmm.
And then you broke the record. And my question to you is, how did life change for you after you broke the record? Did you still get the death threats? Were people still against it?
Well, I think they kind of accepted it once the record was broken. You know, the hardest part, if I may say, the hardest part about that was the fact that about a year and a half or 2 years when I was challenging, when I was getting closer to the record, 715, the breaking Babe Ruth record, was the fact that I was isolated away from from the players in which I played with. They would stay in a hotel, and I would have to stay in another one. And then I had two sons. Well, I had four kids, really, but two of my boys were in school. And I couldn't watch them play basketball. I couldn't watch them do any of the things I wanted them to do. So you know, it was a tough time for me, about 2.5 years. You know, so after it was all over with, I guess they kind of forgot about it.
Well, your life had to change tremendously after you broke the record.
It did. It did. I think that I would have to say that most people realize that, you know, I was only out there just to play baseball. And my life personally changed because what I was able to do, I was able to enjoy my family a little bit more than I did when I was playing the last 2 years of my career.
And were you making any more money?
No. Right?
Right, yes.
Okay, I think, and when I started out, my first contract was $5,000. A year, and it was almost 3 years before, and I was having good years,
mm-hmm.
And that was almost 3 years before I even got to making $20,000. And now, you know, players today, they can hit $260,000, and that qualifies them for the millionaire club.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you know, but then you did go on and you did very well in your life.
I have no complaints. You know, really, I've done well, and the Lord has blessed me. I've been blessed three times over, and sometimes I think I have other somebody else's blessing. You know, I'm well pleased with my life, and my kids are doing fine, and so I don't have any complaints at all, really.
Well, one more question, then I'm going to let Lloyd talk before he just strangles me here. one of the things that I noticed that you owned a BMW dealerships all over Georgia, and one of the things you did, you gave him an autographed baseball. God, if I'd known that, I would have come and bought my BMW from you.
Well, I promise you, I'm going to make sure if you talk to my wife when we get. Let me just say this: I'm going to try my Dickens to try to come there if I can. You know, if this thing doesn't work the way I think it should work, I'll be in the car with her, driving her, with a friend of mine, and we'll be there. But I promise you that I will get a baseball to you.
Well, I would be thrilled. I would be thrilled. So I sure hope you can come, and we would love to be able to talk some more. But I'm going to turn it over to Lloyd, because I know, like I said, he's got his hands around my neck right now saying, shut up, Ann. So here is Lloyd Sartain. He actually is the curator of the Benjamin Mays, and I know you had a long relationship with Benjamin Mays, Dr. Benjamin Mays. Here's Lloyd.
Thank you.
Hello, Hank. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Is it okay if I call you Hank?
Please do. Please.
It's a real honor to speak with you again. I met you at Morehouse College last August. You might remember I introduced myself and you allowed me to take your photograph.
Yes, I do remember that.
And I took I've got Ann a copy of your photograph, an 8x10. It's an excellent photograph.
Uh-huh.
And
I
anyway,
remember that. Yes.
I'm sorry that you can't come to the.
Maybe you can come.
That would be great.
It was something that a previous engagement that I had. And as you know, they're going to have the civil rights game here, and I'm engaged and I really am involved in a lot of the activities that's going to be going on next
month. Yes, sir.
So
yes,
I'm
sir.
Trying to help them make sure that we have good turnouts and crowds. So
yes.
I promise that if I can be of any help, if I can get away, I'm going to be in that car with my wife.
That would be super, Hank, and I appreciate that. And we had one of our middle schools, the Northside Middle School, Principal Cynthia Storr. She had some of her students do some research on your life.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a student sent in a question. I'd like to read that to you.
Okay.
It's kind of a softball question, but it'll give you a chance to elaborate about your relationship with Dr. Mays. It's sent in by Rashad Brown of Northside Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
He asked the question, did you ever have the opportunity to meet Dr. Benjamin Mays, and if so, what would be your opinion of him and his accomplishments?
Well, his accomplishments, needless to say, that is something that I think that has been documentary and books and et cetera. You know, I mean, it's been wonderful.
Yes, sir.
My relationship, have I ever met Dr. Mays? Yes, I've been in his company, several times, and. My wife and I used. My wife is a good friend of his, and we used to have him over to the house every Thanksgiving. I used to go by and pick him up every Thanksgiving, and he'd come by the house, and he wouldn't eat that much, and he wouldn't drink. He'd never drink. He'd harvest Bristol cream, if you know what
that's correct.
Bristol.
That's correct.
He would have just a little bit,
just a touch,
just enough to cover the bottom of the glass.
Yes, sir. And didn't I understand that your wife's, I heard her speak one time at Morehouse about, didn't Dr. Mays introduce you to?
Sure did, yes. So, you know, I'm always in his debt.
Yes, sir.
But no, he certainly did. He was just a wonderful man. I mean, he was at my, when I was inducted into Cooperstown, I made sure.
Yes, sir.
That he got a seat right down front. And
yes, sir.
A friend of mine was fortunate enough, I think, the Coca-Cola company flew him to Cooperstown.
Yes, sir.
And Dr. Mays was sitting right in the front row. And that was the happiest moment in my life. You know,
I'm sure it was.
Him, my mother and my father there, all of them, you know, because Dr. Mays was just like a father to me.
Yes, sir.
And knowing all of the things and what he stood for and the kind of person he was just so, I was just so gratified. You know, I mean, it was a proud moment for me in more ways than one. I couldn't have asked anything better than that
yes, sir.
To have him there with me.
I know that was a great moment for you. And Hank, we had another student, Cheyenne Donnell, sent in a question. His question is this, from Northside Middle School. What advice would you give to students in school that would help us reach the heights of men like Dr. Benjamin Mays and yourself?
Well, as I tell a lot of kids, you know, the first thing I want to let them know that there is no shortcut in life. You read about people things that they shouldn't do. You got to play your whole card. You got to go the right road. You know, you see in sports, you know, you see some of us get involved in drugs and things like that. But there is no shortcut in life. And I said to all of the kids that's listening, don't let anybody, nobody, no matter who you are, what you're doing, where you come from, no matter whether you got money, don't have money, but don't let anybody tell you you can't do something. You should work as hard as you can, give everything that you got, and God will provide a way for you to get whatever it is necessary.
That's right. That's tremendous advice. And I know Dr. Mays had a tremendous faith in God that carried him through to great heights also.
Right.
Along with his education.
Yes, he did. He was. And you know, you read, in fact, you can get all kind of books about Dr. Mays. You know, and the one that I like about him reading right now, and he was a self-made educator himself. You know, I mean, things that he did, a lot of people dare not do, you know.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think one of the things I would like to ask you, Hank, of course, you were born in 1934. Dr. Mays was born, what, in 1894?
Mm-hmm.
How do you find life? You know, you grew up in or were part of our nation during very turbulent times. How do you think we've done on moving discrimination, and not only in black-white, but in religions, cultures, all this type of thing? And, you know, we've got a global world anymore. It used to be just the United States, but now it's a global world.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel we're doing?
Well, Ann, I think we made some progress. I think there's progress between the races. But I also believe, and I'm very cautious, and I try to tell people this, we got such a long ways to still go. And I don't want anybody to have a blind eye and feel like just because some of us have gotten to the top, there is still a lot of us still struggling. And the reason that we're struggling is simply because of the color of our skin. And, I often tell people, you know, where I live here in Atlanta, I live at 1611 Adams Drive, and I'm living it's the ghetto. When I say the ghetto, I live where when I walk out of my house or walk to grab a sandwich, kids from the school can see me. They know who I am. They know I'm a living human being, and I'm not someone that is made of little money and moved to Buckhead somewhere where they never get a chance to see me. So I would say that we still have a long ways to go, and don't let anybody tell you that we don't, because there are still some things that we still not able to do in this country.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you, because I know you've been through, I guess it would have been a much, much worse time in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are today still trying to work forward, right?
Right, right. We as I said before, we move forward in some ways. You know, we fortunate enough we got a black president, but we still have a long ways to go. And I just don't want kids to just don't close the door and say, oh, we got it made, because we don't have it made yet.
Hank, Lloyd back here, I wanted to just say, when I was growing up here in Greenwood in the late 50s, we were real big Dodger fans, my family and I.
Mm-hmm.
I know I disappoint you to say that.
No. When I was growing up, I was a Dodger fan.
You remember some of those big battles between the Milwaukee Braves and Brooklyn Dodgers, Duke Snyder, Junior Gilliam, Gil Hodges.
I was involved in a lot of them, you know. And, when people tell me they were a Dodger fan, you know, I mean, you always have to have something that you have to hold on to, you know. And Jackie Robinson was the first African-American player to play professional baseball, and quite naturally, it was kind of like Joe Louis. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have been a Billy Kahn fan, but I am a Joe Louis fan.
Yes, sir.
You know, so, yes, I'm glad to know that, you know. And I know Rachel Robinson well, and I got to fortunate enough before Jackie left, before he died, rather, I was able to sit and talk with him. You know, he was so instrumental in my career, helping me do some of the things I wanted to do.
Yes.
You know, I think about him. I think about people like Dr. Benjamin E. Mays. And, in fact, my wife and I were just sitting down the other day talking about Dr. Mays, you know.
Yes, sir. Well, I've got, Hank, I want to ask you one more question. After Al Downing threw that pitch where you hit number 715 and broke Babe Ruth's longstanding home run record, when you finally met Al Downing, what was that conversation like?
Well, you know, I knew him before he even pitched to me that day. You know, Al Downing he came up with the New York Yankees, and he was, before he hit his arm, he could throw very, very hard. And, of course, the ball I hit off him that night, I had never had great luck against Al Downing, you know, and he threw me a screwball, and unfortunately, it didn't break the way he wanted it to break.
Right.
And I was able to hit it out of the ballpark. But, you know, I met him the next day, and, you know, I think Al right now, I might be mistaken, but I think for sure he's teaching school somewhere in the New York, New Jersey area. And he and I sat and we talked a long time about it, you know.
How did he feel about throwing that pitch?
Well, you know, I mean, he was the pitcher, and he could have easily walked me. I could have easily popped it up.
Right.
So, you know, he had no regret. You know, I mean, he said, I gave it the best I could. You know,
he's probably proud that he threw the pitch.
Well, I can say this, that he had no regrets, you know, really.
Right.
Well, you know, Hank, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on our station here today.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward. Are you still playing any baseball with the kids or anything?
No, ma'am. I have been, and I haven't picked up a baseball. In fact, the other day I was tempted to go out with my grandson, and he threw so hard, I said, I better not do this.
Didn't want to embarrass yourself, huh?
No, I said, I don't want to embarrass myself. I have not played in a bit. The only thing I hit every now and then is a golf ball, and I don't do very well with that.
Well, thank you so much, Hank Aaron. I certainly hope you're able to come. If not, though, I'll be looking for that baseball.
I will. Thanks very much, Ann, and the best of luck to all of you. And
all right.
Thank you, Hank. It was a pleasure.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, this is WLMA right here in Greenwood. Yes, that's right. You heard Hank Aaron on the phone with us here today. What I would like to do now, Andy, is hear a word from our sponsors, and then, yes, we'll be right back.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Ella, special guest Lloyd Salton. With us live from Sharp Fetz's Gallery, here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here at Sharp Facets Gallery, and yes, we are here with Lloyd Sartain. If you missed it, you missed Hank Aaron on WLMA. Unbelievable, folks. That's right. I am thrilled. I am thrilled to have been able to talk to him. Lloyd, thank you so much for hooking us up here today. Had some interesting questions from middle school students.
We sure did.
And, of course, we'll be doing a podcast of this where they'll be able to hear their names and hear Hank Aaron's response to him. So living down in Atlanta, of course, the big dedication is coming up on Tuesday, April 26th. It is at the 237 North Hospital Street. If you haven't been over there, how is this set up now, Loy? It's you've got a school, the museum, and the birth home. Tell us a little bit about how it's set up over there.
Okay, there are three buildings on site. It's a beautiful site, too, now that the grass has come out green, sidewalks all up to the buildings. On the left side is Dr. Mays' birth home. It's furnished in sparsely furnished furniture from the era. And then in the middle of the site is we call the barn. It's a false barn, but inside it's a modern building. Nice bathrooms, a little kitchenette, has a theater in the back that'll hold about 50 people that we can use as a conference area, or also as a theater to play films on Dr. Mays and some of his speeches. Of course, the front room is the museum, and we depict Dr. Mays' life from birth to death around the walls, and the beautifully framed photographs and wall narrative that explains every phase of his life from birth to death. And then we have a little room that's set off to the side. It's our artifacts room. We have some wonderful items that belong to Dr. Mays that have been so kindly donated to us, especially by Miss Sally Warner of Atlanta, who was Dr. Mays' secretary. And I guess I've been to her home four or five times picking up things that she identifies and bringing them over here. So it's a beautiful display of materials and items relating to Dr. Mays.
You know, this has been a lot of work to put this all together, but it certainly is a tribute to a man who brought so much to, brought it to Greenwood, but then went out in the world and brought it to the world. So president of Morehouse College, you were telling us he was advisor to presidents.
Oh, yes, President Kennedy. He said of Kennedy, few men in America have I admired as much as John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Of course, and then with Johnson, he was the U.S. representative with Vice President Johnson to Rome for Pope Paul XXIII's funeral. And I have a wonderful picture of Johnson and Mays on Air Force One sitting in a cabin face-to-face discussing things. And then of course, President Carter. He was very close with Carter even when he was a governor. And it became very close to Carter when he was in the White House. And Carter had him at the White House several times for discussions with about certain issues that he needed advice on.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, and not only that, so many other people. We talked about Martin Luther King. We've talked about a lot. You've got a great, great, great program put together here. Lots of good people are going to be here. Hank Aaron's wife, Mrs. Billy Aaron, will be there. She's going to give some personal reflections. She actually knew Dr. Mays, isn't that right? And Dr. Mays actually introduced them. Now, she is,
I believe,
his second wife. Yes.
That's correct. Ms. Aaron's first husband died, and was shortly after that, I think around 1971, 72, when Dr. Mays introduced Billy to Hank. I heard her tell that story one day, and she might mention that out at the site, too, when she gets up to speak.
So then, of course, we're going to have, you know, the thing that amazes me, why a Southern boy would go all the way to Maine to go to college. I mean, number one, the temperature, just the temperature there is totally different.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. Actually, Bates College is about 30 minutes from where I grew up. But he went to Bates College in Lewiston, Maine. Can you tell me why did he go there?
I can tell you that, essentially, and Dr. Mays wrote a little paper called Why I Went to Bates College, and we have that there in the display case at the museum.
Okay.
But essentially, back in the day that he was born, blacks were so ill-treated and so and told that they were really inferior mentally to white people. But he had to prove to himself that he was, his mind was just as good as anyone's, and his great desire was to go up north and compete against the whites, and that was a life-changing experience for him. He startled his mother one time, his saintly mother, and told her that if he felt that God had made him inferior, that he would never pray again, and that startled his mother. So it was a big thing in his life. And he had to get up north to compete. And, of course, when he did, he won all kind of awards and was graduated with the honors class. And once and for all, he settled his mind with the fact that his mind was just as good as anybody's.
Yes, and weren't you telling me that he felt he didn't feel inferior? Isn't that one of the things you were telling me, that when he went up there, that he was equal and he had lots of friends up there?
Oh, yes. What a tremendous difference going from the Deep South in an era of Jim Crow segregation, forced segregation. He went up north and he says, I'm living in a predominantly white world and I've got white friends. And he was treated like a human being, he said. And it was such a tremendous change from his Southern life.
Yeah. And that's true, because we didn't have, up north did not have, particularly in Maine, we didn't have many black people up there. And we still don't have a lot of black people up there, I think basically because it's so darn cold.
That could be, Ann. And I know, I think there were two African-Americans in his class, but that was a life-changing experience for him to go to Bates College.
Go to Bates College.
And we're really happy that Dr. Elaine Tuttle Hansen, president of Bates College, is making her way all the way to Greenwood to talk about the great and rich legacy that remains at Bates College.
Yes, I'm going to have to talk to her since that was half an hour from where I'm from. Now, also, you are going to have Dr. Johnny McFadden, professor?
Yes, at the USC in Columbia, University of South Carolina, about 15 years ago, he established the Benjamin Mays Academy for high school kids, and they would come over there about once a month and go through a program, hear guest speakers, and it's been a very successful program, and we're really happy that Dr. Johnny McFadden is going to be here to speak about the Benjamin Mays Academy at the USC.
That's terrific. And then I happen to notice here, Stacy Robinson, one of my favorite singers, is going to be right here in Greenwood, and he's going to be singing The Impossible Dream. That is unbelievable.
Yes. The Impossible Dream, that was sung by Oliver Sewing at Dr. Mays' funeral in 31 March of 1984. And it was such a tremendous song, and there was such a response to his singing that day that he had to do an encore. And we're really happy that Stacy is going to sing that. He's a baritone, just like Oliver Sewing, and we're happy that Stacy is going to be able to sing that.
Well, and Stacy was a former member of the Morehouse Glee Club, so he went to Morehouse, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. He was a Morehouse Glee Club member.
That's right. So. Now, there also isn't Morehouse, they're going to come up here and sing.
Oh, yes. We have five or six members of the Morehouse Glee Club, including Dr. U.Z. Brown, who sang I'm Building Me a Home at the Mays Crossroads dedication in 1974 when they dedicated the Mays Crossroads to Dr. Mays. And he's going to sing that same song, I'm Building Me a Home.
Wow, that's terrific. Well, hey, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors, then we'll be right back. Don't you go away. If you've got a question or a comment, don't hesitate to call us, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner. Your host and Ella, Lloyd Tartan, is our special guest. Live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking about the dedication of the Dr. Benjamin E. Mays Historic Preservation Site. This has been quite a project, been going on, pulling this all together. It's culminating this coming Tuesday, April 26th at 1 p.m. It is at 237 North Hospital Street. If you've been listening further to the first part of the show, you do happen to know that we had Hank Aaron, and of course we will be putting this as a podcast on WLMA. The thing that impressed me about talking to Hank Aaron, what an easy to talk to person, what a down to earth person he is.
Yeah, very humble person.
Yes, and of course hasn't eaten a pork chop in probably 10 years. I'll bet nobody ever asked him a question like that.
Yeah, I think he was set back a little bit, Ann.
Well, I like the personal stuff with people, you know. I think that brings it
pork
back chops. To
pork what chops. What am I here talking about pork chops?
Yeah, there you go. In fact, that was his nickname, pork chop.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good.
So anyways, he is going to try to come, but for sure his wife, Mrs. Billy Aaron, is going to be here, and that's going to be exciting. Lots of great people are going to be here. We do need to talk about, you're actually going to have some family members of Dr. Benjamin Mays that will be here.
Yes, let me mention that often I get the question out when I'm giving tours, did Dr. Mays have any children? And of course the answer to that is no, and he has no living nephews. However, he does have two nieces who are in the Cleveland area. Ms. Bernice Mays Perkins, she gave me permission to use her age. She's 82 years old, a wonderful woman. And her sister, who is 90, Ms. Arsenia Grayer, she's coming. And they're bringing about 9 people from Cleveland. We're really happy that they're going to be here. Dr. Mays' great nephew, Dwight Powell, and his family from Washington, D.C., he's coming also. He was the first that gave the 3-minute tribute at Dr. Mays' funeral, a wonderful family. I've met both of them, and Dr. Marshall and Alsop of Atlanta, Georgia, who works on birth defects with the CDC in Atlanta. She's going to be here also.
Wow! So we're going to have a lot of a lot of family members here. This certainly is a big, big event right here in Greenwood. Sure hope you're going to be able to go. It starts at 1 o'clock, and you're thinking an hour and a half-ish is what we're looking at for this program. And then, of course, there will be tours.
Yes, after the program, the site is open for going through the museum, his birth home, and the old schoolhouse.
But then it continues. The day continues, doesn't it? You've got at Greenwood Community Theater, the Mays documentary, Change in the Wind. That's at 6:30. 6:45, they're doing the audio of Dr. May's 1966, If I Had a Child speech. And then at 7:30 p.m., audio of Dr. May's 1954 sermon at Evanston, Illinois. And that also will be at the Greenwood Museum. So lots of opportunities to learn more about Dr. Benjamin Mays. And then we have the big keynote speaker. We've forgotten about that one.
Oh, yes. Ambassador Andrew Young from Atlanta. We're just so fortunate and honored that he would come to Greenwood to help us perpetuate the memory and the legacy of Dr. Benjamin Mays here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Ambassador Andrew Young was the first black congressman from the Deep South since Reconstruction. That was in the 70s, I believe. And then he became mayor of Atlanta, Georgia. And then, of course, he was a key lieutenant of Martin Luther King. Just about everywhere Dr. King went, Andrew Young went with him.
So this is going to be the event you don't want to miss. And, you know, if you don't get to go, though, certainly, what is the hours of the museum, and when can you go check it out?
Well, anytime. Normally, we do it by telephone call-in, but just any time we'll arrange for a tour with you. Just call in.
What is the telephone number to call?
223-8434.
223-8434. And this is a good, excellent program for children.
Oh, yes. We've had some good field trips out there. Children, high school class from history class. Ms. Veris brought her history class out. That was a good visit.
Okay. So if you'd like to find out more, all you have to do is contact Loy Sartain. I know you've been working hard with all these details. It's hard to pull something like this together, isn't it, Loy?
Oh, it just takes a lot of effort, a lot of detail, and it's been a big effort. It's been worth it, and it's all about Dr. Mays and perpetuating the memory and legacy of Dr. Mays.
Okay, now we have like 3 minutes left. I want you in 2 minutes to describe to me the high points of Dr. Mays, as far as you've done a lot of research. How could you sum it up?
Well, I would say the high points of his life, as we've already discussed, Anne, is the fact that he was president of Morehouse College for 27 long years, and he touched thousands of lives at Morehouse College, encouraging his students, encouraging them to go out into life, to be men and to be successful people. And there's been so many that have been extremely successful for Morehouse College. Of course, his relationship with Dr. King, he says in the eulogy to Dr. King that eulogizing him was like eulogizing one's own son, that so close and so precious was he to me. And, of course, he had a tremendous impact, too, on politicians in this country, not only the presidents, but he was very close to Kennedy and Johnson and Carter. But he made a tremendous impact on this nation, and so many people are not aware of the impact that he made on this great nation of ours.
You know, that's sometimes the greatest compliment you can give somebody, is for them to have been able to contribute to society and yet not have been jumping up and down saying, "I did this."
That's right. Dr. Mays was just a truly great individual. When you speak of greatness, you have to include Dr. Mays in that. He was a legendary, a legend in his own time while he lived on this earth. And it was a sad day for him to depart. And at the museum, we have his funeral program that you can review. All the people that gave wonderful tributes to him, including President Carter, he gave a tremendous tribute to Dr. Mays. And college presidents, Bates College president, Dr. Reynolds, made the statement that stuck with me. And he said, "I wish, if I had the power, I would require every American to read Dr. Mays' autobiography, Born to Rebel.
Born to Rebel. Well, you know what? It's all happening on Tuesday, April 26, 1 p.m., out there at 237 North Hospital Street. If you haven't been over there, you're really in for a treat. Please be there if you can. And as I said, we will be posting a podcast on this on the website, WLMA.net. Look forward to being there on Tuesday, Loy, and meeting all the people. And I sure hope you will be able to make it out there. This is, of course, you know, your favorite radio station right here on WLMA, right here in Greenwood. Loy, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you, Ann. It's a real pleasure to be on your station today.
Well, thank you very much. Also, do want to tell you, Andy, while we've got just a second here, we have bids happening on our online auction at Sharp Facets Gallery. If you haven't been there, go there, check it out. Auction on a lot of these items ends tomorrow afternoon at 3. Some will be carried through the weekend. You got to check back. But right now, we have a 16.5 London Blue Topaz. It's at $70. A Barbie doll, $20. A bold floral bracelet in sterling silver is at $45. And a vintage train pocket watch and pocket knife, it is at $15. They are great deals. Check them out, sharpfacetsgallery.com. You know what I'm talking about. It's all on the online auction. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and yes, we have had a great day today. We've had Hank Aaron. We've had Loy Sartain. We've been talking about Dr. Benjamin Mays. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Bye-bye, Andy.
Bye, Ann.